Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 36, episode 36 in a collector series. This week's question comes from Josh Adelson over Twitter, and Josh writes to ask, what are top choices Obama, his NLRB appointees, and Solis could make affecting labor organizing, in parentheses, without Congress? NLRB there is the National Labor Relations Board, and Solis, of course, refers to Hilda Solis, who is the Secretary of Labor. And it's a great question because it's certainly not been the case that labor had a lot of legislative victories in the first 2 years, but whatever legislative victories they may have had the first 2 years, they're probably going to have to kiss goodbye with a new Republican Congress. And the question is, what can be done going forward? And to answer that, I have with me on the line Dorian Warren. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science and the School of International Public Affairs at Columbia University, and he specializes in the study of inequality in American politics. Also, labor politics. He has, if I'm not mistaken, two books about labor coming out soon, and he focuses on political organizations of marginalized groups. Dorian, thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, so Dorian, let's say that there's not going to be, well, certainly the Employee Free Choice Act, which was the major legislative goal of the labor movement going into 08 and the last 2 years, which Democrats, I would say, really just completely abandoned, and the White House abandoned. So that didn't happen. It's hard to see us getting anything, certainly now. So what can the White House do? What are some things on the table that they can do that are going to bolster the strength of organized labor and also create better conditions for collective bargaining and organizing?
Great question. And I think it's even more important considering that the fate of the Employee Free Choice Act, I think, is it's pretty much dead for a generation. But that's another story. So with that being the case, the administration can do many, many things to bolster workers' rights. A few things the president has already done. So appointing pro-labor people to the Department of Labor, Hilda Solis, pro-labor appointees to the National Labor Relations Board, which oversees union elections and the union recognition process for private sector workers. So appointees is one thing.
There was one appointee that they used.
Recess power. So that's Craig Becker, who's a longtime lawyer for the Service Employees International Union, the AFL-CIO, which was the Chamber of Commerce's number one person they were wanted to oppose out of all the administration's appointees. So that's a pretty significant win for labor within the administration. Appointees is one way. Within federal agencies, there are several rule changes that administrators can get through that would actually bolster labor. So to give you a concrete example of something that's already happened, there's something called the National Mediation Board, and that's a similar agency like the NLRB, but it only covers essentially transportation workers, so air and railway workers.
Huh.
And with pro-labor appointees, too, from the Obama administration to that three-member board, or they changed the rule in terms of how airline employees and other transportation employees can win union recognition. It used to be the case under the Railway Labor Act that you needed a majority of those who turned out to vote in a union election, say among flight attendants for Delta, you needed a majority of those who turned out to vote to win union recognition.
Which is, I will note, the way that an American election works, right?
Exactly. The difference, though, between that rule and the democratic process for National Labor Relations Board elections is that you only need a majority of those who actually vote instead of a majority of the entire bargaining unit in National Labor Relations Board elections. The National Mediation Board, you needed a majority in the bargaining unit to vote. So what employers would do was just try to depress the turnout.
So let's just go back because this is a sort of fine point distinction, but it's an important one. You have two different election processes. In the NLRB process, which is the one that you get collective bargaining for, you have to get, in order to win recognition, you need a majority of the people that show up to vote, which is the way it works in, say, a presidential election. You don't have to win a majority of registered voters in the
country. That's exactly right.
You have to win a majority of the people that actually come and show up at the polls. It was formerly the case for transportation workers as covered by the National Railway Act and brought before the National Mediation Board that you had to win a majority of everyone in the bargaining unit. So Barack Obama would not have been elected president because presumably he did not get a majority of registered voters in the country. And what you're saying is that rule has been changed so that it's now the same as the NLRB, thanks to pro-labor appointees to the mediation board.
Yes. And what that might also mean with that simple rule change is that we'll probably see somewhere around 50 to 70,000 more workers who vote to unionize in the transportation industry.
Okay, so you've given several examples of places where there's been appointees and those have made a difference. What are things that they haven't done yet but can do going forward that would strengthen the power of workers and collective bargaining?
Well, two things in particular. First is the federal procurement process. So the United States government is a major contractor and purchaser of services. The administration could use that procurement process to demand that anyone who contracts with the federal government be essentially pro-labor and adhere to the labor laws on the books. So that would prevent employers from violating the law, which they do routinely as a matter of business practice, by the power of the federal government's dollars to encourage pro-labor employers and to respect workers' rights.
So many businesses have contracts with the government, and basically the government could use that as both carrot and stick to basically say, you know, whatever company, you know, Raytheon or
Boeing or whoever. Yes, yes.
If your labor practices are, if you hire union-busting firms, if you do X, Y, or Z, we will not contract with you.
Exactly. So that's one thing. A second thing would be a rule change that the National Labor Relations Board is considering right now, and that would be to go to what are called snap or quick elections. So what happens in National Labor Relations Board elections now is that workers file a petition for a union election. On average, it takes somewhere between 40 to 60 days for an election to be scheduled. And in that time, the employer runs an intense opposition campaign to unionization. They threaten workers, they fire workers in a third of campaigns. They harass workers, they coerce, they intimidate. Moving to quicker elections, say 10 days from the moment a group of workers files a petition, would actually curtail that employer opposition campaign, often curtailing illegal activities that employers use all the time. So that's a simple rule change the board could decide to implement.
And that doesn't have to be passed. I mean, that's just something that NLRB is going to make a decision on.
That's exactly right.
And I should also note that often they're able to delay and delay and delay. I mean, these often elections get postponed and postponed and postponed, which, you know, I'm sure the Democrats would have loved to be able to do that in November in this past election day. You know, maybe, I mean, seriously, think about it, right? I mean, you put it off in a few more months of job growth or the economy picks up. That's, you know, that's not the way that we understand elections as working, that there's some set date and you have to do it.
That's right. Well, there's one other effort that's important here, and that's what the Department of Labor can do. And part of that is through the budget of the Department of Labor. So the Obama budget increases the Department of Labor's budget, which is important in terms of enforcement of existing laws. So think overtime laws, minimum wage laws, something called misclassification, where employers misclassify employees as independent contractors to get around adhering to workplace regulations.
My first job I ever had, I was hired as a contractor and I should not have been. In fact, I looked up the guidelines for whether you're a contractor or a wage employee on the DOL website, and it was extremely clear that I was not a contractor.
Right. And essentially what it means to be an independent contractor is that the rule of law does not apply to you.
Right. You mean the rule of law in terms of what?
Workplace regulations. So think sexual or racial harassment or discrimination. Think overtime, minimum wage laws, even healthcare to an extent. If you're an independent contractor, employers have much more leeway to not have to adhere to those workplace regulations the rest of us have to, or governed by.
So let me just recap here. I mean, there's appointments to the NLRB, the National Mediation Board, which he's done and will hopefully continue to do. There is the budget for the DOL and beefing up enforcement on these
enforcement
areas.
Enforcement and cracking down, especially on misclassification, on violations of overtime as well as minimum wage laws, yes.
There's the NLRB making a ruling on snap elections. And then I think the one that has the most kind of possibly profound and far-reaching implications is some sort of united federal procurement policy that was explicitly pro-labor. In fact, I should know the American Prospect has recently have published a kind of special issue on this topic. And I was talking to some labor folks yesterday who were talking about the possibility of creating some White House office the same way that, you know, Karl Rove created the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives to essentially take care of the Bush base, right? And create an institutional structure. There could be a White House Office of Federal Procurement and Labor Policy,
yes,
or something, right?
Where all of this sits right now, for the most part, is in the Vice President's Middle Class Task Force, which is basically the ghetto-wise depository of everything lots of us care about in terms of workers' rights. So absolutely a serious White House Office of Federal Procurement Policy. would be, you know, that'd be fantastic in terms of upping the stakes in terms of enforcement of labor law.
And then one historical note that I learned from lunch with a few labor folks yesterday was that the increase in union density that comes after the passage of the Wagner Act comes actually about half through organizing and about half through Roosevelt using these procurement powers to really essentially choose unionized firms and to use the power of the purse of the federal government to, yes, to contract with firms that were unionized.
Yes. And what's important about that is that was in a time of very tight labor markets during World War II.
Right. Okay. Dorian Warren is assistant professor at the Department of Political Science and School of International and Public Affairs at Columbia University. He studies a lot of stuff that I am really interested in, and so I follow his work. He writes about labor. He studies inequality. He was in the New York Times recently. He and some other people have started an elite studies operation, which I'm going to be tracking very closely. Dorian, thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available in iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Laura Stampler and yours truly. Senior producers at The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Mosquita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to all on that day?